The Feast of Corpus Christi was instituted in the church as part of the liturgical calendar of the church in 1246, 1,246 years after the birth of Christ. It was given its current liturgical form and the sequence and the mass setting that we say originally by St. Thomas Aquinas, great theologian, who after he wrote his treatise on the Eucharist, put down his pen in front of the tabernacle and said something similar to, "There is nothing more I can say or do." And he never wrote again. Well, he may have done a shopping list or something, but he never put forward any great theological works because he had certainly delivered to the church and the world so much. When we look at the gospel reading today, you're going to say to yourselves, most of you, "Oh, here we go, the loaves and fish again." Yes. It is mentioned in every one of the gospels. The numbers are a little different. The place is a little different at times. The time of day is a little different. That event, that miraculous event of feeding the multitude, we can say, if 5,000 trips you up, well, then we just say the multitude, is mentioned in every event. This in every gospel. This one in Luke was written probably about 30 years after St. Paul wrote to the Corinthians. And the words that St. Paul put in the Corinthians are the words of institution that I'm going to be using in a moment for the consecration, which were the words that were used at the Last Supper. So in a very short time after Jesus' ascension, the liturgy, the structure of the Mass, primarily as we know it, at the Eucharistic element, is exactly the same as the Last Supper. St. Paul gave it word to word to the churches that he founded and reinforced. He didn't play around with the words. He took the bread, gave the blessing, broke it, and gave to them. It's exactly what I will be doing in a moment. And then he took the cup, the chalice. So we don't have a chalice mentioned in Luke's version of the feeding of the 5,000, but we have other elements that tie us into the same Eucharistic event. And it's interesting that he uses the five loaves, not one loaf, five loaves and two fish. Put them together, you get seven, just in case your calculator's got a flat battery. Anything to do with seven is going to take us right back to creation, the 7 days of creation. This is a new beginning. Another element in there that I particularly like, probably from where I stand at the moment in my role in the church, is that he gave the bread to them for them to distribute. So he gave the bread to individuals, to his closest disciples, and they were the ones that distributed it. They were the instruments of the feeding, if you like. It could not have happened without them. And then they would go back and they would be saying, it could not have happened without him. This could not be happening today without him. This could not be happening today without you and I. What was begun then is not symbolic. It was a living action that, I'm going to say, transcends all time. And I really, really like that. Because what we do here at Eucharist, when we bring together ourselves, in the last parts of the gospel there, the scraps left over are, we are a broken people. They were fed with the body and blood of Christ, but we're still the scraps. We still need to be gathered together. And so we keep coming back and we distribute what we receive. The gift that we receive is the gift that we must give. And it transcends all time. It's wonderful because we go back to the past, and this is where the present meets the past. He says, Jesus said, do this, every time you do this in memory of me. We go back to the Last Supper, that upper room, like St. Paul did. And then we hear all of the gospel writers saying the same thing, using the same language. So it's where the present meets the past, and it gives us a foretaste, a glimpse of what we are to receive in the future when we as scraps finish this sometimes broken, but I hope mostly joyful life. When we're gathered together by the love of the Lord in his eternal embrace. In Eucharist, in celebrating the body and blood of Christ, we do go back, we take the present back to the past, and it points us to the future. This is a journey that we are on. And it's a journey that we are all involved in together. There is a role. You've heard me say that many times over the last 10 years. There is a role for each and every one of us, whether we are distributors of the body and blood of Christ, or we gather up the scraps. We look for the scraps, for the broken, for the needy, the poor, the outcast, and we bring them in so that they too may receive the gift that keeps on giving. You've heard me say, some of you before, several years ago, I mentioned the words of St. Augustine. When he would give communion, he would say, the body of Christ, or he would actually have said, Corpus Christi, the body of Christ, become what you receive. Now, we believe that, and I hope you do believe that, because statistically, at the moment, over 60% of professed Catholics do not believe in the real presence, research tells us. They believe in Jesus, but they can't get past the fact that the bread and the wine are symbols of Jesus. They cannot get past what we call transubstantiation. They cannot get past the words of consecration that make this the body and blood of Christ. What holds a person back from truly believing that we are receiving his most precious body and blood? This gift that keeps on giving. What holds them back? But that's what research tells us, and I find that astounding. I also find it a bit disturbing, of course, because this is our ultimate leap of faith. Don't ask me to scientifically prove it. I'm not interested. You know, as I've also said, science will one day prove what our faith always knew. And my faith tells me that this is not an act, this is not a symbol, this is the real presence of Jesus Christ, his body and blood, broken, poured out for us scraps. And we are to become the gift that we have been given. We must take what it is that we have become and take it out to the scraps of the world, the poor, the lonely, the broken. That's why I often say there is a role for every single one of us. Not everybody will be called to stand here or over there or serve or read. Not everybody will be called to do that. Or work the music. Not everybody's called to do that. Everybody who comes to communion is called to give the gift that they have received. And that gift ultimately ends in a journey from the past experienced here in the present, taking us into our eternal future, into the eternal embrace of our God of love and mercy.